Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm here with regular guest of the Richards Report, Six Park co-founder and co-CEO, Pat Garrett, and we're going to have a chat about what's going on in the financial world. Pat, welcome back to the Richards Report.
Thanks, Ted. Always a pleasure to be here.
Now, most listeners would be familiar with Pat as he's a regular guest on the show. I try and get Pat on once a quarter or so to catch up and discuss what's going on in global markets and get his view. Before we get into the discussion, the usual disclaimers. This is just for informational purposes only and does not qualify as financial advice.
You're listening to The Richards Report, where we will speak with investment experts from around the country. We will cut through the jargon to allow you to make more insightful investment decisions for your future. This is The Richards Report.
Pat, I was having a look at the analytics for this podcast the other day, and you can imagine a high concentration of listeners is based in Australia. Well, pretty much all.
Yeah.
But then there's a big drop off, and there's a few listeners in the US and the UK. But number four on the list took me a bit by surprise. Pat, what country do you think is number four on the list for listeners?
Clearly, I haven't been prepped for this one. I'll throw out, I don't know why I'm saying Italy.
Actually, you're not far away, especially with the flag. It's Hungary.
So, really?
Shout out to, if you're in Hungary, you're listening in right now.
Do you have any insights as to why that might be?
No insights at all. I'd assume it's an Aussie backpacker that for a period of time when we could travel might have been listening into me when they were in Budapest or something like that. But shout out to the Hungarians. All right, Pat, episode 42, getting close to the big 50, getting close to 150,000 downloads. So thanks to everyone that listens in. Pat, your episodes always rate really well, hence the invites back. So
good to hear.
Pat, I always want to put a time stamp on episodes, especially in this time that we are in here. Yeah. So it's, what is it? 24th of July. And I thought it's worth reflecting on the financial year that's been, with the financial year just finishing earlier on in this month. And COVID has obviously impacted people in so many ways, be it economically, socially, and obviously the health impacts too. Yep. But COVID has also accelerated the uptake, usage, and acceptance of a lot of tech trends. Yep. And tech trends that we always knew, Pat, were going to happen, but maybe not this quickly.
Yeah.
It's kind of squeezed many years, possibly a decade of behavioral change into, Pat, a matter of months.
A couple of months, yeah.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this the other day. For me, the wallet is now an endangered species in that my phone does it all, and two, coins are just...
Coins are gone.
Yeah, yeah. And so Pat, from your perspective, any behavioral or lifestyle trends you've noticed?
Well, speaking from personal experience, one would be the puppy effect.
It's actually quite common, the amount
of people.
I know.
That's why I raise it.
Yeah.
It's not just me. It's I think there have been a run on people getting dogs for a variety of obvious reasons. And I have to say, it's been tremendous to get a dog at this time when you have to spend so much time at home. But the other thing I would notice is, having moved about a year ago to where I am now, I've probably gotten to know my neighbors more in the last 3 months than I did in the first nine.
Yep.
Because there's this a little bit of sense of caring and community, which is hopefully one of the good things that's come out of this mess that I've noticed in the neighborhood. Obviously, the buying online has just gone off the charts. Those companies that are positioned well to sell online have fared better than bricks and mortar.
We might just spend a moment on that.
Yep.
Because the beneficiaries, Harvey Norman,
yep,
I believe, paid a special dividend due to the amount of money people are spending on not just doing up their home, but preparing home offices and adjusting to this work from home environment. Kogan, massive beneficiary.
Yep.
You'd assume that lifestyle change is probably here to stay for a certain extent.
Yeah, I've got a friend who runs a marketing and communications and media business, and one of their clients is one of the biggest global running shoe providers. Their downtick from retail in-store sales has been offset by like four times the amount of shoes they've sold online. as you know, people buying walking shoes, running shoes, and whatnot, and just embraced buying. It's almost like the financial stress and impact hasn't quite hit some people yet. They're at home in front of a laptop. They think, well, I'm going to get a little retail therapy because the world's gone crazy. So anyway, that's certainly been noticeable.
At the time of recording, JobSeeker and JobKeeper is still going. I know at some stage they will drop down, but possibly these things giving still an artificial boost to people's day-to-day spending. I also want to speak about this perfect storm for the Big Five that's going on and that has happened for Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Microsoft and Google. Peter Morgan, former fund manager for Perpetual, he tweeted something great the other day that a daily price rise in Amazon, in fact, one night this occurred, was the equivalent of over three Woolworths.
Yeah.
And I don't mean three stores. Supermarkets. I mean the whole business. So this is including all their supermarkets, all the Big W's, all the Dan Murphy's, the BWS's, et cetera, that they own. That's what can move day to day for an Amazon in terms of price movement. And I think it's important to reflect on this is from a stock market and index point of view, it doesn't matter so much if Boeing is selling less planes or a high profile store like Hertz has gone bankrupt and how sad it is that these businesses are going out of business. They don't move the worldwide indexes.
Yeah.
What does is tens of millions of people in a matter of weeks signing up to Amazon Prime and ordering things online that they would have once purchased in a store, or subscriptions to Netflix and the billions of people spending more time on social media.
Yeah,
that's what's really moving these big US indexes and providing the tailwinds for these big companies.
Yeah, I think the percentage composition of the top of the big tech companies of the indices has obviously grown materially versus what it used to be. So they can move an index. And there have been days when, for example, I think the Dow's been down materially, but NASDAQ has set new highs, right? So, and people don't realize.
And for those that maybe not be familiar, the NASDAQ has the higher allocation to tech.
Yep, exactly right. And the Dow's a much broader index and would include some of the companies that have been negatively hit by all of this. And people also, I think, forget that in Amazon's case, which you mentioned, they're not just an online sort of retail business. They've got AWS, which is the big data technology storage and warehousing and whatnot. So this shift that we're seeing in some of these trends are not incremental. They're seismic and they're not short term. They're probably long term. So I think all that's true. What that means about fair valuations and other subject matter in itself.
Yes.
But there's a reason why some of these things are happening.
Yeah, we might. We're going to have a chat about. It's one thing to have a good business or a good business idea, but the valuation needs to be taken into account when you're looking at whether it's a good investment or not. Shifting from a global view to something much closer to home, especially for you and I, just want to speak a bit about Six Park and what's been going on for us the last 12 months, and has there been any changes?
Yeah. Well, the last 12 months have been really good for the business, basically because what we do in terms of putting together diversified portfolios at an affordable price point for consumers has become, there's probably been more awareness in the market of the benefits of that type of service. Obviously, the Banking Royal Commission illuminated some of the problems in the industry that we're trying to solve. And so we've seen really attractive growth rates in our client growth and in the assets that we're managing as people look for alternatives and as the number of unadvised people who can't access or afford financial advice or investment advice are now seeking alternatives and are willing to go online to get that kind of service, whereas they may not have before. And without going on at great length, low interest rates, that traditional sort of money into a savings account to fund the home deposit. With interest rates the way they are, people are kind of forced now to start to think, well, what am I going to do with my money and how do I invest it? And so there's just some growing demand. And all of this has happened overseas in the wake of the GFC, and it's kind of just starting to happen now. So the last 12 months have been good for Six Park in that regard, as we obviously want to try to get our service in front of as many people as possible. And there's sort of a shift now in the business as we turn in, you know, the new financial year, to work with intermediaries and financial advisors and accountants to try to get distribution through them as well as direct to consumers.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an interesting time with so many advisors month after month leaving the industry. Yeah. It's quite fascinating to see, you know, sometimes 6,000 advisors or some huge number will leave the industry and 12 have entered.
Yeah.
It's an interesting time that we're in right now.
I mean, to give that a context, Ted, there was something, Advisor Ratings has done a lot of good work on this, something like 28,000 financial advisors not that long ago, and there's about 20,000 now. Now, there's a lot of things behind that, increased compliance and costs, educational standards and whatnot, but there is a really fundamental shift going on in the financial advice sector, and we're in the middle of probably some of the tough part of that, which will hopefully lead to ultimately kind of a better delivery model for consumers and more tech-driven, cost down, accessibility up, range of services to more people. There is a mass market, a mass affluent or advice gap, whatever you want to call it, cohort of people who really need some help. And hopefully where all this ends is, you know, they're able to get that.
Yeah. Let's shift back to markets for a bit. It is a unique time we're in, and you could easily make the argument that it's a bear market. But Pat, you could easily make the argument that it's a bull market with some of the recent returns we've seen. So people have now coined the new term, it's a kangaroo market. There's been some great days and weeks in recent times, right next to some of the worst days, which actually, from a historical point of view, that's just what happens.
Yeah.
Pat, we're around 5 months into COVID so far. What's your thoughts on this volatility?
Well, share markets, by definition, are reasonably volatile. That you to get the long term returns that you get through shares, you have to accept a certain measure of volatility. It's obviously been heightened for some pretty extreme examples. Josh Brown out of the U.S. Recently noted, I think, something like,
for those not familiar, Josh Brown is he's the CEO of Ritholtz Wealth Management based in America, and he's fantastic. I recommend you follow him on Twitter. He's one of the best out there. Downtown Josh Brown.
Yeah, he has really, really thoughtful, easy to understand insights into the market, and he's a very much of a New York tell it like it is type guy. So there's not a lot of BS around what he talks about. Anyway, he pointed out, and I forget exactly the number, but the One out of every 3 days has seen something like that, has seen up or down 2% in the market this year. And that's just insane. So in terms of historically high level of volatility. So I think that's to be expected. Probably the obvious question is where to from here. And people get paid to prognosticate on that. So they're going to say, well, we're going up or we're going down, or we're going up and down. I think, from what I see out of the people that know most in my mind, and what I see from hear from our investment committee, which would fall into that category, is we don't know.
Yeah.
It's just not a very popular one in the media to sell. We don't know. It's too early to tell. The data points to give real informed directionality as to where we might be in 12 months, we don't have yet. You know, related to the vaccine, the US economy outlook, hopefully it'll unfold before long, good or bad. So there's some direction, but I think it's too early to tell.
With predicting the future and how impossible that is, at the time of recording, we do hear from time to time some trials for vaccines are going well.
Yep.
So you could make a great argument that we could potentially have a vaccine in a month's time or so. Yeah, that is a valid argument. Equally, you could make a great argument that we will not have a vaccine for years, and they're both just as likely.
Yeah, I've heard some, from what I gather, really smart people say it's going to be at least a year before we have a vaccine. And I've heard other people say we might have one before the end of this calendar year. I don't know. How do you make sense of that?
Yeah, and so I think it's an honorable answer to be actually transparent and identify
yeah.
that we're not throwing darts at the dartboard here.
Yeah. The question is, what do you do when you don't know?
Yeah. Well, you diversify.
Yeah. You diversify and reflect on your job and financial stability or lack thereof and make whatever adjustments you can. That's the most likely way to end up with the best financial outcome, but also probably the best mental outcome. So you don't kind of stress too much about things or as much as possible.
Pat, being an American, I want to speak about the US just for a bit in terms of you are the epicenter of the financial world and what's going on over there with Trump. And as I mentioned before, some of these big American tech platforms, like FANG stocks that I mentioned before.
Yep.
How do you think this year, 2020, compares with another year, 1968, which has often been described as one of the worst years for the US, and that some say it was a year that shattered America. I'm not saying they're true replicas of each other, but there are some similarities in that there were both been a lot of racial tensions.
Yeah.
We haven't seen, hopefully we don't, the assassinations that occurred in 1968 with Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. But what I'm getting at here is that it's a year of triumphs and tragedies, social and political upheavals. Pat, you were in the US in 1968.
I remember it well, Ted. I was 2.5 years old.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. In all seriousness, we have talked about this a little bit, obviously, because there are some striking similarities in terms of, as you mentioned, political instability, social unrest. And back then, the economy, global economy, was starting to slow as it was leading into that time period. So you had some, to use the word again, sort of seismic activities happening on multiple fronts at the same time. And
Vietnam War was going on.
Yeah. So, and it was getting worse, right? And it does mirror in some ways, kind of, it feels like it mirrors what we're going through now. And there was, I think it was about an 18-month recession, but it recovered.
Yep.
As it always does. 4 years later, there was the oil crisis and the market crashed again, but it recovered. So I think, I guess one of the main takeaways there is one, these things happen in different ways, shapes, or form periodically. And two, history shows that markets and societies do recover. I would never bet it's hard to fathom this right this moment, but I would never bet against the resilience of the US.
Yeah.
Over time, as dysfunctional as it is now.
Pat, you mentioned something there that things happened and they recovered. And I just want to use that to transition to the next topic. That is COVID a black swan event? And I believe I need to call out, I might be guilty of referring to COVID being a black swan event from time to time before.
Yeah.
But I did see that the man who coined this metaphor or saying, whatever it is, Nassim Taleb, who wrote the book of the same name, he's incredibly frustrated by its misuse. As he said, it's being incorrectly being used. It's become a cliche to describe anything that may surprise us. But I know this global pandemic might be unique to Australia, but they actually it do. They do happen.
This isn't the first pandemic of its nature. So if a black swan event is something that truly happens once every however many squillion years, so to speak, technically this really wouldn't be one. I think maybe where you're headed with this is some of the resulting activity could be described as black swan-like.
I think the government policies and they may be a bit more unpredictable. Pat, I know really not much more can be added here, but at some stage governments will do a post-mortem on their response and as to what they'll do next time, because this will pop up again.
Yeah, I think probably one of the key things there, which is arguably the biggest unknown right now, is to what extent does the amount of central bank intervention and printing of money help or hurt over the long term?
Yeah.
Certainly, it's helpful in the short term in a variety of ways. As to what the price to be paid for that is down the road, that could take a long time to figure out.
Yeah.
And it might be the next generation that pays the price for it in terms of inflation and a variety of other things. But that's probably the black swan event that, yeah, to some extent that we were talking about before, which is the extent to which central banks are, you know, are basically bailing out the world, you know, so to speak. And I think it's the post-mortem, we'll have to look at what the impacts of that are. It's probably one of the main things.
Pat, let's move on to Tesla and have a chat about the last 12 months that they've had, because that has just been incredible. I should say, I just don't get it. Like, I'm not a big fan of their cars. I think it's interesting in terms of how they work, but from a design point of view, I think they look a bit boring and dated, but
yeah,
that's besides the point. I'm obviously not a believer.
They recently announced
a profit.
They are making profits. As to whether they reflect the valuation accurately reflects what that looks like.
Yeah. And that's what we were mentioning before, it's one thing to have an exciting or a great business model. That's just one aspect of the discussion. At some stage, you've got to take into account the valuation.
Yeah.
And what has probably been priced into the Tesla stock price right now is that Tesla's now worth more money than Toyota. So
it'd be more than like the four biggest automakers combined.
Yeah. So if you were to see Teslas everywhere, well, that's already been baked into the price. What would need to happen for Tesla's share price to double again? Because I obviously don't touch it, but I am fascinated as to what's going on there.
I actually think Tesla is a really good example, albeit somewhat extreme, of a little bit of what's going on in the market on a couple fronts. One is obviously people are looking further down the road as to the prospective success of a company and in the way they look at it now. So they're not looking at what do we think it's going to be like in 1 year. They're thinking the world's changing. What's it going to look like in 5 or 10? And they're banking on Tesla sort of being a leader in some way down that road. So there's a lot of emotion kind of gets thrown into that. And the other, which came up at our recent investment committee meeting, this is a little bit of a tangent, but it also speaks to what's going on in the market. Without getting sort of too technical on it, future earnings of companies get discounted back to today to come up with what the right valuation is of a business. And
commonly referred to as the discounted cash flow.
Discounted cash flow.
Yeah.
So everyone's sort of, there's sort of a popular theme in the market that all the fundamentals have been thrown out the window, et cetera, et cetera. I don't really think that's necessarily true. I think discounted cash flow is still, whether they know it or not, is how people tend to value things. But what's happening is they're looking 10 years down the road, seeing, you know, huge earnings potential, and then discounting them back at close to zero interest rates, which will give you a really big number today. And as opposed to, you know, the difference between discounting something back at 2% versus 5% in assumed interest rate, well, they're more than doubles the value of a company. And if you believe we're in a ever lower for ever longer interest rate environment, that goes a little way towards explaining why there's some wind behind the share market, particularly some of the growth companies, is just the general view that interest rates are going to be low for a really long time. And Tesla would be benefiting from that, as well as just a lot of speculation and hype.
Also a great example of how hard it is to pick individual companies, because there were many professionals out there that went hard shorting this company 6-12 months ago and have been hurt hard.
The other end is look at Afterpay.
Yes, well, and we should put a timestamp on that, because that is bouncing around a lot too.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the importance of rebalancing in times like now and have a look at some interesting examples. Before we do, actually, Pat, for those not familiar with the term rebalancing, can you provide a bit of color for listeners what it is?
Yeah. So when you're investing, ultimately one way or the other, whether you like it or not, you're going to end up in different asset classes. And some of those might be growth, some might be defensive. So growth assets being shares, defensive being, call it bonds or cash. Those, if you make a determination at a point in time what the right mix between, say, growth and defensive is for your situation and investment horizon, et cetera, and you invest money, eventually over time, your actual allocation to those different types of asset classes will change because markets move. And rebalancing is periodically selling some of what's outperformed to buy some of what's underperformed to get you back in line with what your target allocation is. And it sounds a little counterintuitive because it says, you know, sell some of what's gone well to buy some that hasn't gone well. And the theory is if you're investing for medium to long term, that eventually those asset classes will revert to their mean. So you're effectively buying low and selling high when you rebalance. And so robo-advice, which is what we do, automates that, which is one of the things we think is good about it. And just to bring it to life a little bit, we just put out a report with asset class returns through the end of June. Global property has taken it on the chin, global listed property, not surprisingly. So it's down double digits in the last year. Bonds are up about 4 or 5%. So if you had a portfolio of global listed property and bonds and you wanted to 50-50, it's not going to be 50-50 from a year ago. It's going to be different. So you would sell off a little bit of global property to buy, some of your bond holdings to buy global property. So to get back to that 50-50 level, because one's gone one way and the other's gone the other in the last year. And over time, there's just academic research that shows that it's a smart thing to do with your portfolio. So that's probably not the short answer you were looking for.
No, that's fine.
It's not an easy one to answer in two sentences.
And you've only used two asset classes there to describe this. And you can throw in a few others like emerging markets and just to help play that out. You know, emerging markets off the back of China has had a cracking last few months.
Yeah, exactly.
The example I actually want to speak about is Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, in that Apple now represents around 40% of Berkshire Hathaway's stock portfolio.
Yeah, not many people would guess that.
Warren actually was quoted, he no longer thinks of Apple as a stock, he thinks it as a third of his business.
Yeah.
Pat, I could easily make up some potential reasons why Apple could suffer some hypothetical catastrophic event. Yeah. We only have to think back a couple of weeks ago when someone hacked into Twitter and stuffed around with thousands of accounts and fortuitously for them, this individual or these people chose not to do anything stupid. If someone did this at Apple to a level where people no longer trusted the brand, it'd be incredible what that may do for the share price. And this would be horrific for Buffett. And I'm not going to sit here and try and say, oh, Warren, you're doing it wrong. But the benefits of diversifying is at some stage, Warren may look at this exposure and it's like it is because it's done so well.
Yeah, I think he'll be the first to say not many people can take the kind of bets that he does. And that's why he's such a big advocate of index funds and diversification. And it's a really interesting case you bring up, Ted, because he's a value investor, as you know. And most people wouldn't put a huge bet on Apple as being considered value investing. But he's also a really smart guy. And I've found in the last 12 months or so, when some of his performance metrics weren't as great as they historically have been, the piling on that, you know, Buffett's day and the sun's over, the world's changed, was, I thought, a little bit overdone. And sure enough, the guy goes out, and I won't get this exactly right, but he was a big buyer of Apple 6-12 months ago. And I think the value of their holdings went up like $40 billion in the last 3 months. And he'd be sitting somewhere going, I'm not as dumb as people think I am.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are having pot shots at him for his position, selling the positions on the airlines. But
exactly. Yeah.
And to be fair, when you've got $200 billion or whatever he's got, it's very hard to find attractive businesses to purchase.
Yeah.
Where you can enter and exit. You can't take a bit of Kogan. You can't take a bit of Afterpay.
To your question though, Ted, I think what he's determined is that Apple has such a strong moat, meaning a defensive position in the market, that a cybersecurity event or something like that wouldn't actually knock it off its proverbial pedestal in its position in the market.
You'd assume Twitter would have the same vote too, though, wouldn't you? Especially if Trump is kind of able to communicate with the world from his account.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some other things that have happened. Let's take a pause while we help the dog out.
The dog impact.
Yeah. So, Pat, we're probably in a recession right now. I know Frydenberg, the treasurer, doesn't want to use that R word. Who knows where if we're in the middle or some other part. But in times like these, it's important to try and preserve cash if you don't have much financial security. The thing is, it can be very hard to unwind something called lifestyle creep.
And yep.
What I want to mention here, it's the recent example I saw of this, is Robert De Niro, who reportedly, his lawyer said, would be lucky if he could earn $7.5 million this year.
Wouldn't it be nice for all that problem?
But this wasn't tongue-in-cheek. He has grown this expensive lifestyle off the back of this income that he generates year after year. And he's finding it hard to unwind it. You need to make sure that your spending patterns don't increase in proportion with your income.
Yeah, and living within your means has a different interpretation sort of for everyone. I do find it hard to have a lot of sympathy for somebody who has trouble with $7.5 million a year. But I do get that people, as they generate wealth over time, they alter their lifestyle to reflect that. And then if that gets taken away, it means adjustment. So I get that. But you also have to have a certain amount of fiscal responsibility to go along with it.
And professional athletes, footballers, the same thing.
Yep.
Be it retiring and moving on to and adjusting your lifestyle.
Yep.
Or probably what's going on in most leagues around the world where they're having to take a pay cut.
Yeah.
And the impact on what that lifestyle that they've built up over years. On the topic of sport is actually something I really look forward to on the weekends because down in Victoria, there's not too much else we can do right now.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed these leagues can continue and see out the seasons. But Pat, as an American, I just want to mention what's going on in the US is because the NBA and the MLB are having different approaches to continuing their seasons.
Totally different.
Yeah. For the listeners that aren't aware, the NBA is doing the same as the AFL and the NRL in that they're having a hub where all the teams will fly in. I believe it's out of Disneyland down in Florida.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Obviously, having 30 or 40 hotels of the same level isn't possible. Yeah. The NBA has made a call that for mental health, I think the worst teams are going to get the best hotels and the good teams are going to get the...
Is that going to incentivize the good teams to lose all that? Will they have a switch midway through?
Well, it's quite fascinating because I think it's acknowledging that the depression of losing week after week is going to be hard for some of these teams. They might not be able to keep these teams there unless there's a nice place to go back to.
There is a reasonable disparity with it. On a relative basis, in the NBA, there's a disparity between the top teams and the less successful teams, whereas a lot of the other pro sports, as you'd be well aware, have tried to level the playing field so everyone has the same economic benefit. Probably not as much the case in the NBA.
Well, juxtaposed to this style of trying to get a season going is the MLB, the American Baseball League, who don't have the same probably relationship with the playing group and the Players Association. They butt heads probably a lot more and haven't been able to get the buy-in of the players to move to one location to be able to get this season going. So the players have decided, no, we're not going to go to a hub, we're going to fly around.
Yeah.
And Pat, as you pointed out, there's quite a lot of players that have said...
Yeah, some big stars raised their hand and said, I'm out.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Yeah.
Which is hard to blame them. They've got families and health things to think about as well. And I assume there's a logistics plan behind pulling it all off, but it can't be bulletproof.
Yeah, as a case study, it's going to be interesting to see that many moving parts flying around the world week after week, day after day.
Yeah.
How long could they hold this on for before a couple of players, get COVID and bring a whole league down?
Yeah. I mean, presumably it's private jets, it's private everything. Major League Baseball doesn't have the money that the NFL and the NBA does, but it still has a lot of money. So they can probably logistically figure out a way to quarantine, or whatever the right word is, the movement of players around the country to try to get a season up and running. But you're right. It's a lot of people moving around, and I think you can only do so much before it, you know, there's a risk that situation doesn't work out so well, and then what?
Yeah. To a certain extent, I feel like the rest of the world is looking how sporting leagues go with this, because if a sporting league with all the money and all the things they're putting in place to try and avoid COVID can't manage working in different locations and prevent COVID from happening,
yeah.
then the rest of the world, the professional world, is in no way ready to return back to normal life and offices and
yeah.
et cetera.
Yeah. I think also, Ted, you touched on this and you'd have a real appreciation for this as well, obviously. When a society is under stress the way we are now, people really anchor on to the things that make them feel like things are somewhat normal. And as you alluded to earlier, turning on the TV, if you're locked at home and your whole work situation's changed or you're out of work or whatnot, turning on the footy on Sunday is something that makes you feel like the world hasn't gone completely pear-shaped. So I think there's a dynamic that you talked about before, but it's also what kind of psychological impact would it have, not just financial and logistics, but psychological, if people have to accept the fact that, okay, it's so bad that we can't even have sports to look at.
Yeah. Let's move on. For those that may have enjoyed an earlier episode of the podcast where I reviewed Good to Great by Jim Collins, I thought I'd mention that Jim has a new book coming out, which looks at individual businessmen and women and more at an individual level rather than a business perspective. I'm not sure when this book's going to be released, but I thought it's quite interesting to point that out. Pat, on the topic of TV, if you're after a TV recommendation, there's a great one called Dark on Netflix.
Yep.
It's actually a German show. Highly recommend it.
Haven't seen it, but heard of it. Thanks.
Yeah, really good. And make sure you're paying attention because it... it's bloody hard.
I have problems with that these days.
Put your phone down, concentrate yeah. on the TV. But it's really good. And if you're listening around the world, hit me up on Twitter or Pat on Twitter.
Yep.
You can find us on in all the social channels, and especially if you're a Hungarian and listening in, over in Budapest. Yeah. If you're interested in taking the six-part risk assessment to receive your investment recommendation, or if you're just interested in our content and the newsletters that we send out to our subscribers, make sure you sign up. A link will be in the show episode notes. So if you're on your phone, you can scroll down and click on the link there. If not, that's available at sixpark.com.au. Pat, thanks very much for joining us for another episode of the Richards Report.
Always great to be on. I look forward to seeing you tap over, the 50 milestone coming up?
Yep, 8 more episodes, and we've got some big guests lined up, so make sure you subscribe if this is a new episode. See you next time on The Richards Report.